Grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Good morning. You will note that the platforming has been moved in preparation for tonight's chorale, this afternoon's chorale concert here. And so we are all on a level playing field, which is a lovely thing. The platforming is used only for sight lines, so that people at different places in our rather egalitarian worship space, square as it is, flat as it is, can have a better look either at the ambo, that funny word used to describe a combined pulpit and lectern, AMBO, for those who need crossword help, it's a great four-letter word. And so, speaking of four-letter words, that are particularly useless. We heard one a lot today in the reading from the Gospel, and it is that word that our teenagers so desperately want to hear from someone else, love. And it is the most useless word in the English language. I sense because it's the Rorschach of all words. So, Marge, if I ask you if you love me, and you would say yes, and if I said, well, will you love me if you make me a new white chasuble? Oh, she will love me if she picks the fabric for it. Okay? Sure. So, loving someone because they'll do something for you is one way to look at it. Those three words are describing so much about who we are in humanity, about what we want to hear. The lack of them also fills up our life too, in a darker way. A child never hearing it from a parent, otherwise consumed with some trauma of their own, lives a life without ever hearing it. How does that shape them? And so that word carries the freight and the baggage of so many different things. Jesus uses it a good deal, but he has some specific things he has to say about it. And so specific, it has to do with what his life is and becomes of his life. But it also has to do with how the life started, in a way, at least the earthly life. Here in the back corner of the church, the Livingston window is a window with a funny Greek name on it called Kenosis. It's the one with the cross in it. And that's from a word used in the Philippians hymn, chapter 2. Christ, not counting equality with God a thing to be grasped, emptied of himself and became one of us. The self-emptying, Kenosis, Christ, the self-emptying God, is the God of Jesus, is the God who is Jesus for us. The revelation of a God who self-empties, who gives up, who surrenders, who chooses the other than the self, always. So, and specifically, how do we live in the same pattern of that self-emptying love? Last week, just to go back a bit, and you can go on the internet and hear it if you weren't here, we got very granular and specific, we thought, about how we live in community. As you remember, there is sort of a horizontal and vertical access to our faith. The horizontal is that relationship you have with your God. That is, Jesus is Lord, and you came to say that at some point in your life, or it was said before you and you embraced it. By your baptism, Jesus is Lord, and you currently and continually renew that through every Eucharistic gathering that you are part of. That's that vertical aspect, and it's always essential to have that, at least in your mind's eye, that you know, this is who I am. I am the Lord's possession. The horizontal aspect is that place where my relationship with Jesus only makes sense in community, not on its own, statically. It's a dynamic thing, and so we together, when two or three are gathered together, there Jesus is in our midst. I often joke that Jesus didn't say when seven or eight are gathered together, because that's just too hard. Being in community is the hardest thing we do as Christians and as human beings. And we're not terribly good at it. We're very tribal about things. Look at our world today. But our gathering on Sundays are fairly tribal too, as I look around. It's the nature of our lives, sadly. But it is something to confess and something to try to do better at. Now, when I said that, I didn't want you to have a twinge of guilt about it. Right? Guilt is such a problem in the Christian community. Honestly, Fran feels guilty all the time. I tell her, just please stop. You know, she'll miss a Sunday and she'll say, "Jesus, I'm sorry I wasn't here last week." And I'll say, "Did that guilt get you here?" No. In fact, the people I see who don't come regularly or whatever that means anymore, I say, don't, when they apologize to me in the supermarket, I will say, if that guilt would get you here more regularly, please have at it. But it doesn't, does it? Guilt is in some way the enemy of the church. It is just anxiety wrapped up in some insecurity. Does it motivate you? Does it challenge you? Does it get you where you want to go? Sometimes it's necessary. That's a longer and a different sermon. What's the opposite of guilt? What? Freedom? Maybe? Here's my idea. But freedom's good. So the opposite of guilt is responsibility, not innocence. Fanta is never going to be innocent. She's a human being like the rest of us. Sandy, 83. Not innocent a day of his life. Which I would say for myself. As he would say for myself quickly. But the idea to be innocent, the goal is not to be innocent. The goal is not to be guilt-free. The goal is to be responsible. To respond to a situation that happens. So, we have to get specific about how we're responsible in loving people. We talked last week about the vertical horizontal, then we gave some illustrations. No triangles. If you have a problem with someone, talk to them directly rather than about them to someone else. We talked certainly about direct communication, about listening to people's complaints without taking it personally. It's a selfish thing to do to take it personally because you're not listening to them. You're just feeling guilty for no good reason. Sometimes you do have a good reason, and then you need to kind of work on what it is to be responsible in that moment. But if I'm present to you and you're a complaint to me, I'm listening for your commitment underneath the complaint. Remember? If someone has a complaint against you, there must be a commitment behind it. And we listen to that because we have courage. Being courageous is the only approach to Christian community. We are courageous with each other, and we are present to them even in the midst of their complaint, or their trouble, or their anxiety, or their guilt, because we are responding, and that is being responsible. That's how we live with each other. Now, living in love is grounded ultimately in the beginning of the story of our Christian story, here with the Philippians hymn, the self-emptying nature of Christ. Which is giving up the self or others. Here is Christ, no monarchy, clothed in easy state to reign. Here, arms outstretched upon the cross, aching the world sustain. Love to the loveless shown that they might lovely be. Our faith is about giving up of power and privilege and self, rather than gathering it to ourselves. So having a rather horizontal plane, where we are all together, in a radical equality called the Eucharist, the assembly of the faithful, each with different gifts, each with different abilities, equal in worth and respect and dignity before all, this is the struggle of what community is to be. If we begin with the humility offered to us the example of Jesus as our Savior, self-emptying, not carrying a quality of God of things to be grasped. If we begin with that humility, we'll have some success with it. If we begin with the understanding that no one is all right, I'm not right and you're not all wrong, I don't need to be right, I don't need you to be wrong, we have some hope at what Christian community could be. A healthy suspicion of our own place of privilege. It's always a valuable way to enter into your world. Paul says, when I am weak, then am I strong. In 2 Corinthians. Fabulous passage. I repeat it to myself all the time, particularly when I'm feeling particularly neurotically guilty about things. Gary had a stent put in his heart on Thursday. And he's doing okay. Right? So far, so good. I was praying for Gary this week, but I didn't get to visit him. Yeah, you say that's fine, and it was in and out. But I was feeling terribly guilty about not getting there, right? And then I assumed, oh, he never called me, so I must be really upset. So here's a rule, another rule to add to our lives. When you assume, and we make assumptions about what other people are feeling and thinking all the time, right? And clergy do a lot of assuming about what people are thinking in their pew. I know Marjorie is thinking, when is he going to get over with this sermon? Aren't you thinking that? She's not thinking that. Who would have just thought she was thinking that? So, who here has really bizarre assumptions about what other people are thinking? Am I terribly alone in this? Am I horribly alone? Oh, you know, they didn't want to do bizarre. Okay. For those listening in later on. What other than bizarre? Weird? How about wrong? Strange? Oh, we'll go wrong. Okay. Who has wrong assumptions about other people floating in their heads? Oh, fine. All right, good. You didn't like bizarre. Okay, I find that very familiar and comfortable territory. I would. Thank you. What's the commitment behind that? I'll have to work on that. All right, so living life is challenging in community. And these are rules of the road to help us move a little bit far forward. The reason this is so important is because when people come to be with us and we want them to join in our mission, it's very important that we're very clear and honest and open about who we are and who we aren't. We cannot promise to be all to everyone. Paul apparently was better than us. To the Jew, I am a Jew. To the Greek, I am a Greek. To the slave, I am a slave. To the free man, I am a free man. I must to all and always bring all to Christ. I don't know how that worked out for Paul, but for us it's a little bit of a problem. Because we're a specific people in a specific time and place with a specific way in which we function as community. And we would be better at that if we moved along with some simple devices in our minds about how we love. And that would be through humility, in modeling after the self-emptying nature of our Christ, our God, and keeping in mind how it is when two or three of us gather together, we exist in that radical equality. With courage and compassion, the co-suffering nature of our Christ is embodied in our language with each other, and especially our humility.